Dr. Sam Jones is in. Good morning.
Good morning, Ashwin. How are you?
Good. We wanted to talk about the similarity of animal conditions between humans and animals. We've got a call of Robin that we'll go to in just a moment, but can you give us an introduction to this topic, the fact that we get a lot of the same diseases?
We do indeed. If we talk about dogs and cats at least, we're all mammals. So it makes sense that dogs and cats would suffer similar diseases to what humans would. And in fact, interestingly, there's a few behavioural problems that affect animals just like they do humans as well. So, it's just really interesting because you wouldn't really think, you'd think there'd be enough difference between dogs and cats and humans that they wouldn't necessarily suffer things like, obsessive compulsive disorder and things like that. But it does exist in the veterinary world.
I guess we all needed to survive Komodo dragons at some point. So we've all got anxiety as one of them.
Yes, exactly. So, I think there's a lot of, by virtue of the fact that we essentially have pets in captive environments, and not to say that they're necessarily bad environments, but they are, usually within some form of enclosure, whether it be a front yard, backyard, or a household, or a property on acreage, it does come with its own set of problems. And, you might have, for example, a classic would be a dog that is typically bred for working, whether it be herding sheep or cattle or whatever, such as a border collie or a kelpie. Often these guys can be pretty sort of intense in their disposition and can suffer some anxiety as a result of not being able to kind of act out and do those behaviours that they're bred to do. They're genetically hardwired to get out there and be very athletic, and do that intensive work.
So that's where some barking problems could arise.
Barking, yeah, that's just one of them. But in actual fact, some of these dogs will chase up and down the fence, almost the sort of way that we see zoo animals do it, the pacing and that sort of thing. But often they'll race up and down. Some dogs will develop behavioural issues where they'll chase their tail. And I've seen a dog actually that suffered from that situation where chased his tail intensively for about 40 minutes and actually his paws began to bleed. So that's how sort of it can really overcome their sort of central nervous system, if you like.
And I think we'll tap into some of these common conditions between humans and animals as we go. Some of our listeners might ring them up. Robin, you've called in from Townsville. Good morning.
Yes, hello there, Sam and Ashwin.
Hi, Robin.
I finally come to the expert. I asked Dr. Carl and he didn't know.
Wow, I'm deeply flattered. Thanks, Robin.
I asked the gardener and she didn't know, so they said, talk to your vet. So now I'd like to ask you.
That's a lot of pressure on you, Sam. Okay, here we go.
Legionella, which is often contracted by humans in, bagged mulch, can animals catch Legionella from that or any mulch if you put it down on the ground or in pots or whatever, please?
That's a really good question because, Legionnaires' disease is caused by bacteria. So technically any animal can develop an infection from bacteria. And I don't know that, dogs and cats at least have any known resistance to that disease. But certainly in terms of recorded cases, it's considered to be extremely rare. Now, I've never seen one in veterinary practice. There have been reports of calves developing Legionnaires' disease. But to my knowledge, I can't really speak from personal experience about it because I haven't had any cases of it. But I think if it does exist in the veterinary world, it's very rare in cats and dogs.
Oh, righto. I guess that's as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
We don't really know then if they can.
Oh, well, I mean, I think we can assume that they can. I would assume that they can just because of the nature of the pathogen, that it is a bacteria. But, like all infectious diseases, you need a dose adequate to cause infection and appropriate exposure time to infectious agent. It's a bit different to viruses, say. Like viruses often will be very host specific. And that's why when we see viruses jump between hosts, that's when it becomes really dangerous because that's when you can have these kind of global pandemics, like SARS virus and those various other ones that can jump across species through mutation. But bacteria is different. That bacteria can infect any animal.
Robin,
thank you very much for your time, and I hope they don't get it, that's all.
Now, Robin, Robin, are you still there?
Yeah.
Before you go, because your question was, can they get Legionella from mucking around in the mulch? Have you got cats that are now going to have to stay inside because you're not going to be sure if they can hang out in the garden anymore?
Oh, oh, well, my cats are indoor cats anyway, and I only take them out to get their grass and have a dig and so on, okay. And they're back inside. But they might come in contact with my mulch that I put on plants, that's all.
Okay, just something to watch out for. Robin, thank you for calling in. Peter is in Thornside. Good morning, Peter.
Oh, g'day, Sam. How are you going?
Hi, Peter. I'm good, thanks.
Look, I got a cat, 12 years old.
Yeah.
Started having turns or fits, loses its balance, falls off beds, careers into furniture, spins around in circles. It actually goes clockwise, but whatever. It meows loudly just a few times, and then when the fit or turn is over, it gets up and it walks in circles for like 5 to 10 minutes. Been to the vet. They said he had an ear infection. We treated that. But it could have been neurological, and it's still going on. He's had about 5 of these turns in the last couple of months.
Very interesting. How long do they last, Peter, typically, from sort of start to finish? You know,
start to finish, only about 4 or 5 minutes until he gets up, and then he'll walk in circles just one way for like 5 or 10 minutes, but 4 to 5 minutes for the actual fit turn.
Yeah, because listening to that, you know, typically if a cat or dog has a middle ear infection, which certainly can cause neurological signs like falling over and a head tilt and that sort of thing, usually you won't find this sort of intermittent presentation where they'll have an episode for 4 to 5 minutes and then be fine afterwards, you know. I'd be much more concerned, and I don't want to stress you out, but I'd be more concerned about a brain tumour or something like that, especially in an older cat, you know, that's 12 years of age. But we don't sort of want to jump to that conclusion, of course. The way that I would sort of approach this would be to do what would probably happen if you went to, if a human was presenting with these signs and, you know, went to hospital or something, they would run a series of blood tests, baseline blood tests, to look at your physiology and also neurological tests as well. And the other thing I should point out is that is it a girl, a female cat?
Or no, it's a boy.
Boy, he should have his urine checked as well, because I mean, this, he might be fine physiologically, and this might actually be seizures associated with epilepsy, right? But it's just that if those start to occur suddenly in an older cat, then we have to have brain tumours on the list of differential possibilities, because, yep, you know, that's when you typically see it. And with the cats that might show, idiopathic epilepsy, which is, not due to a brain tumour, that usually would present younger, you know, earlier in life. The first step would be the blood test, neurological examination, and then if they came back as normal, well, if you were happy to spend the money on a CT or MRI or something like that, then that would be the next diagnostic step, you know, to really identify what's going on.
Thanks for calling in, Peter. You are listening to Dr. Sam Jones here from My Local Vet here in Brisbane. If you've got a question for Sam, you can call in now, 1300 222 612, 1300 222 612.
Just on that topic too, just before we leave that discussion around Peter's cat, the other possibility is syncope, which it doesn't sound like, because she's sort of doing some circling and whatnot after she has these episodes of falling over, it doesn't sound like syncope, but some cats and dogs can actually develop low blood pressure to the point where they basically pass out. And it doesn't mean that they're motionless. They can paddle and they can do things that look exactly like a seizure. So I think that's the other thing we need to think about, Ashwin, with that one.
Okay, so there's a couple of symptoms that can be quite confusing, isn't it, for people? A couple of different conditions, which is why you need to talk to your vet, but maybe up your awareness of how they might present in your own animal. As I said, if you'd like to ask a question, 1300 222 612. Benita has rung in from the Atherton Tablelands. Good morning, Benita.
Yes, good morning, Shane. How are you?
Hi, Benita. I'm good. I used to keep snakes. I know you guys have the incredible jungle python up there in the Atherton Table. Have you ever seen one?
Snakes, yeah, there's a few. I've come across quite a few big ones. They're beautiful out where Butcher's Creek, big old pythons.
Good on you.
And I love them, and we try to look after our creatures out that way, and anything that's, you know, on the road, we wait for it to cross.
Yes,
We love all them creatures out there. There's heaps of snakes around now.
I bet there are.
I've got a couple of guinea pigs, and I've taken them on. I've looked after them for about maybe a year and a half now.
Yep.
And one of them have a bad case of mange, and it's gone on to another, his brother.
Mm.
So I've took them into the wildlife place, and I've got some special food for them. I've got them a spot-on treatment.
Oh, good.
And just one of my guinea pigs is just all of a sudden having a little seizure all the time now. And I'm going to take him back into the vet, but I've given him a bath, and I put the hair blow on cool, and I blow his hair. And they're old guys, these yep. guinea pigs. And so, yes, I've just taken them on, and I've never had them in my life ever. But so you're never too old to try something
no,
out.
No, good on you.
I've taken these little babies on, and I really love them, and I'm just trying to see if I can get a rough idea how I can try to help these seizures that he's having.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing that you bring up there, Benita, because we pretty much only see this in guinea pigs, and it will be related to the mites. I mean, the only time I've ever seen guinea pigs have seizures was mites, and I know that you're treating it, which is wonderful, but I would suggest that the guinea pig that is having seizures probably still has a ongoing mite infestation. And what happens is they get these mites, the mites in the skin, they're intensely itchy, and the itchiness kind of hijacks their nervous system, and then they go on to basically have a seizure as a result of hyperstimulation of their nervous system. And it's pretty dramatic, and obviously, you know, it's not ideal for them because they'll be suffering. So what you need to do is go back to your original vet and have a chat about what's going on so that you can eradicate the mites. And that might involve some environmental treatment as well, but definitely the spot-on has worked very well for me in the past in treating those patients. And I do love guinea pigs. I've got a friend of mine, believe it or not, who he went away to a retreat where they did guinea pig healing. I'd never heard of it.
Oh,
and
wow.
They sit out in a field and everybody gets a guinea pig. Yeah, and it sort of soothes the soul, you know? Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
So, well, yeah. My boys, they've adapted to me. They love my voice, me and my partner's voice. And they, you know, it's very hard for me to try and leave him. When I see him and he's shaking like that,
yeah.
I said, well, maybe he needs another spot-on treatment or maybe he needs something else,
yeah.
you know,
get him back to the vet.
More.
Get him back to the vet, yes, Benita. He needs to be reassessed and then you'll sort him out. You'll be able to sort him out. Yep.
Oh, thank you very much for that, Doctor.
My pleasure.
Thanks for calling in,
Benita.
Diana has rung in before from when. Just 1 second, Diana. I've just got to go back to guinea pig healing. What's the spiritual effect of the guinea pig when you hold it for long enough?
You're probably asking the wrong person.
Okay.
I haven't done it.
Oh, right.
I would give it a go. I don't actually know, but I guess maybe it's just about having some connection with Mother Earth and nature, you know, and having this innocent little creature in your hands, and it can't hurt.
We've got goat yoga. Guinea pig healing?
Yeah, I don't know about yoga. Guinea pig yoga.
Guinea pig yoga. That'd be the cutest little yoga to watch.
There's a gap in the market there for us, Ashwin.
Yeah, tic-tac sensation ready to happen. Diana, though, has rung in from Wynnum. Good morning, Diana.
Good morning, Ashwin and Sam.
Hi, Diana.
Hi. I've got a bimoodle, a Bichon crossed with a Maltese poodle.
Okay.
And he gets a lot of ear infections, and you know, I've got the prescribed ear drops, and they usually put him on a prednisone, but we can only ever do half strength because he destroys the sleeping pattern of every person in the house because he drinks so much water.
Right.
That you know, he pees all night. So, but what can I do to try and we've cut his ears, hair in his ears. We've tried to trim that down and everything else. But is there anything else I can do?
Yes. Well, this is actually a very common presentation that we see at my local vet. You know, pets coming to us that have had chronic ear issues, you know, the owner's tried lots of different things, been to the vet several times, keeps coming back. And for some pets, it can be seasonal. So coming into spring, summer, that's when they tend to get it. Other pets, it's just, you know, every six weeks to, you know, 3 months, they'll develop an ear infection. And with your little dog, what sort of category does he or she fall into? Is it just ongoing, or is it sort of a seasonal thing, do you think?
That's about every 2 or 3 months.
Yes,
it doesn't
okay.
matter what season, but,
yep.
but it's
yep.
not good in humid conditions, though.
Yes, of course, that does tend to exacerbate things because. Yep. you know, bacteria and yeast, which are typically the sorts of pathogens we see with ear infections in dogs. They love it in a human environment. They thrive in that sort of environment. All right, so I'll start from the top. Basically, when we see dogs that have these kind of recurring or what appear to be recurring ear infections, the first thing I always say to people is, okay, well, what needs to happen when your pet gets an ear infection and is treated by the vet? The first thing the vet should do, obviously, look inside the ears if they can, if it's not too painful for the pet. But they need to take a sample from both ears, put it onto a glass slide, put it through a series of stains and look at that under the microscope to identify exactly what pathogen they're dealing with. Then they prescribe the appropriate treatment for you to apply at home. And it's important for them to show you how to do that effectively because there is a bit of technique involved. The ear can be a little bit, the ear canal can be a little bit tricky to navigate. And certainly when I, you know, are treating dogs and cats with ear infections, I will always provide a specific ear applicator so that my clients can actually get the treatment down into that deeper area of the ear canal. So that's important because there's lots of people that I've seen that have been treated by other vets that haven't really, I don't think, achieved adequate concentrations of ear medication in the deeper portion of the ear canal. Right, so then once you've treated, and we typically will treat for 2 weeks as a minimum, then we'll see the patient back. And if the ear canal looks normal at that point, it's really, really important that we then take another sample from each of those ears and establish that there is no more bacteria or yeast or both under the microscope. Only once we have a cytological cure do we then stop treatment. And the reason I'm stressing this so much is because plenty of people will, you know, do 2 weeks of medication and, you know, the dog then looks pretty normal and is not scratching or uncomfortable and they either stop of their own volition or the vet might tell them to stop without actually checking that cytology. And what can happen is you still have bacteria and yeast lurking in those ear canals, but you've got what they call a subclinical infection, meaning the dog's not showing signs of being uncomfortable, but yet the bacteria is still there or the yeast is still there and then they just grow back up again, right? So that's one possibility. But the other thing that we obviously need to mention here is that your dog could be predisposed to infections. Now, whether that be through an underlying allergy, such as a skin allergy like atopy, where they're exposed to environmental allergens, pollens, grasses, things like that, and those pollens and grasses can cause spontaneous inflammation of the ear canals, which then you can get a secondary ear infection from that spontaneous inflammation because the ear canals become very hot and warm and the bacteria love it. And the yeast that actually, there's yeast that live in the ear canal as part of the normal flora of the ear canal. And when it's hot and humid, they flourish and they grow out of control. And that's when you start to see clinical signs. So that's one possibility in terms of predisposition. But another one is anatomy. And you talked about hair in the ear canals. Well, this is my advice for people out there that are thinking, yeah, I've got a dog with really hairy ears. There's two situations when you've got a dog with hairy ears. There's a dog with hairy ear canals that will predispose to ear infections, and they keep getting recurring ear infections because the hair traps kind of hot air and bacteria love it. And those dogs will benefit from having their ear canals plucked, right? But there's plenty of dogs out there that will have hairy ear canals that just simply won't get ear infections as a result of that hair. And in fact, if you pluck their hair, it will cause inflammation, as you would imagine. Pulling hair out tends to cause some sort of pain and inflammatory response. And then that inflammation can actually cause an ear infection. So it's a pretty complex situation. And that's why often we'll allocate, you know, a whole hour of consultation time to these more chronic skin conditions.
Okay, thank you for calling in. It's funny, isn't it? The treatment is worse than the disease. They're just like humans. Sometimes we experiment with really alternative treatments that we might have heard on a website, but they can cause more harm than good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of those things you could look at. You can find those on the internet pretty easily.
Okay. You're listening to Dr. Sam Jones from My Local Vet. We'll take your next calls on this subject just after this. But if, as I said, if you are struggling with something with your pet, you can give us a call on 1300 222 612.
ABC Listen. There is so much noise right now about the Voice to Parliament referendum. I'm sure you have many questions. I'm Carly Williams.
And I'm Fran Kelly, and we're bringing you a podcast to make sense of it all.
What the Voice is all about.
What it could do and what it definitely won't do.
And why is this referendum important?
The Voice Referendum Explained. Find it now on the ABC Listen app.
To Weekends.
Coming up to 11:30, and Cindy has rung in from Fernie Grove. Good morning, Cindy.
Oh, good morning.
What's going on with your pet?
Oh, I've got a German Shepherd, and he was diagnosed by a vet with lupus on his nose.
Yep.
And the antibiotics prescribed for him, they just didn't work. So we went to another vet and that didn't work. So what we've done is given him a little bit of hemp oil in his dinner every night, like a teaspoon, and it's dried up his nose and actually given his nose a chance to repair. So what's happened is the nose, the black is all gone, but it's coming back a little bit. Is there any cream that we could, any medicated cream over the counter that we could apply to his nose to help?
Interesting that you mentioned there, Cindy, that antibiotics didn't work. I wonder whether he had a secondary bacterial infection, because lupus is an immune-mediated disease, and so typically we would treat that, and if they did have a secondary bacterial infection, obviously we would treat that with antibiotics. But I wonder if that's why you didn't see, you know, a huge response or apparent cure, because that component of the disease process needs to be addressed, you know, the immune-mediated component. So we would typically use drugs that would suppress the immune system to prevent it from kind of attacking his own cells in that area. But to answer your question about something over the counter, not really, no. There's not going to be anything over there, I think, that's going to be effective in this situation.
Thank you for calling in. Unfortunately, Cindy there from Ferny Grove. Deb has rung in from Currumbin Waters. Good morning, Deb.
Oh, good morning, Ashman. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Deb.
I've got a really incessant and aggressive barking dog only when she's in the car. It's just really increased in the last 2 weeks. Anyone that comes near the car, even when we're driving and pulling up at the light, she'll just look at somebody next to her or somebody across the road waiting at the lights and press the door, and she starts barking, wants to attack them. I've smacked her, I've chastised her, I've got a rolled up newspaper, and she's just impervious to it.
So, Deb, this is a very common situation, dogs barking when we don't want them barking, you know, whether it be dog on the porch that barks every time someone walks past the front yard, and your situation, your little dog's barking in the car. And it's a bit hard for me to know, you know, what is the stimulus, for, you know, for your dog barking? It's very contextual, right, why a dog is barking. And certainly what we know is that if a dog is barking through anxiety or fear, any form of punishment can actually heighten that and worsen that anxiety. So I would steer clear of any form of punishment in that situation. And what I try and do is, if you can, try and identify what you think is the stimulus. You know, is she seeing another, when you say she sees other people and whatnot, is it is she hyper aroused or something like that? And is it possible for us to...
Yesterday was somebody vaping in his car. The day before that was a Fleuro tradie having a chat on the phone.
Yes.
She doesn't like irresponsible behaviour on the road. Sorry.
She's very health conscious. She doesn't like vaping, and she doesn't. Okay. So it's a bit hard to know exactly what it is, though, that's causing her to do that. And maybe it is just, she sees something outside the car and she wants to engage with it. So what I try and do in this situation is, the best way to manage it, try and train it out of her if you can. And the way to do that, which is going to be a bit tricky, is to have the stimulus, whatever it might be, you know, some sort of thing outside the car that would typically cause her to bark, have it at a distance where she's not barking, right? And then you would give her treats. Is she quite treat responsive? Like, will she, you know, does she enjoy eating treats? Treats and praise, right? So, or if you pull up at the lights and for whatever reason she doesn't bark, I would go give her a treat immediately. Or if she was barking and then stopped, then give her a treat immediately and try to, that way she can develop an association with not barking and a reward, right? And that's going to be much better than a punishment. The other thing you can do is try to give her a counter command that essentially is asking her to do something which is doesn't really allow her to bark. So you might say to her, you might have an area in the back of the car there where she can sit on a mat and she has to pick up a toy. So you might say, you know, you can train her to do that at home, you know, on the same mat, you know, on your mat. And then, and you can train her to pick up the toy as well. Pick up the toy. Okay, good girl. You know, and you give her a little treat, right? So when she's in the car, you've got the mat in the car. She sees something and then you say, on your mat, and she'll just run to the mat eventually, you know, once you get her trained to it, and you give her the treat or you give her a toy. And that will, if she's got a toy in her mouth, she's not going to bark. So you can actually counter command to distract it from barking at those things.
Thanks for calling in, Deb. Sally says, this is a safety dog. It's not
a safety tip.
It is.
Yes.
It's just worried about people's respiratory health, isn't it? Barking at vaping and
that's
all
right.
Sorts of bad behaviour.
Need more dogs like that out on the roads.
Exactly. Responsible dogs. Wendy has rung in from Mermaid Beach. Good morning, Wendy.
Oh, yes. First of all, I've got my phone on speaker. Is that a problem?
I think we'll just take your question. It sounds okay for now. So, yeah, let us know what's bugging you with your animal.
Okay. I've got a canary that he's stuck in a molt.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just wondering what else I can do. I'm giving him calcium, keeping him warm. I have been giving him a bit of malting tonic.
Right.
And quite a bit of protein and greens.
Mm.
And just keeping him quiet. But he's probably been in a molt since, well, they start in January, since last year, really.
Yep, yep. So, Wendy, this happens from time to time. After 14 years of being a vet, it still happens from time to time where I just got to step up and say, I've got no idea whatsoever. Only because, I'm not a bird vet. Occasionally we will see birds for general health checks and things like that. But, a canary that's stuck in a mold, I know the limit of my expertise. And I think the best thing to do would be to chat to one of the bird specialists. There's a few around in Brisbane. You're at the Gold Coast, I think, though. Is that right? Did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if there's one down at the Gold Coast, but it'd be worth Googling. And even if you go in for a consultation, which certainly wouldn't be a bad idea because then they can do a full physical examination, you're going to get really, really specific advice about that as opposed to seeing your GP vet. And some GP vets do sort of have a special interest in birds, but unfortunately, I'm not one of them.
Thank you for calling in that way. It's always surprised me. There's 4 million animals. You've got a 4-year degree. How do you learn? There's not a lot of time for each animal, really, is it?
You just can't, Ashwin. You really can't, you know. So you got to know your strengths.
Know your strengths. Yeah. Lois has called in from Bowen. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's your issue with your animal?
Well, my hubby's sitting in a tractor somewhere and phoned and said, can I phone you and ask you a question? We've got a couple of Maltese Shih Tzus, and the older one is a male. And when my husband's taking him walking, like yesterday morning up through the bush and that, he said he's just stopping to pee every few metres or anything, every bloody bush and every tree and all the rest of it.
Mm.
Is there a way he can stop that? How normal is that? Or is there somewhere he can stop it?
Yeah, good question, Lois. Is does he have his testicles?
No, he's okay. 7. He was fixed up years ago.
And he's 7 years of age, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, what we need to do is figure out what's going on for him, because this sounds like a acute thing, like it's fairly recently that he started doing it, or has he been doing it for a while?
Oh, he does it for a while. Like, to be honest, I was walking with them this morning down on a beach path, and our feet, we've got a 2-year-old female one, and she was peeing more than he was, I found this morning. But
but has he been doing this for a couple of years, or it's just a recent development that he started urinating every few?
Yeah, it is for a couple of years, really. It just seems to be a habit thing when he goes out and walking. It's just, I don't know if it's just, you know, territorial or whatever.
It may be. It may be something as benign as that. And I guess the first step with anything that we suspect is behavioural is to rule out medical, you know. And so what I'd be doing, you know, if I was looking at this little guy, is I'd be doing a full physical examination to, check him over and see what's going on with his urinary system. And that would involve, extending looking at the penis, feeling the bladder through the abdomen, and even a digital rectal examination to just check his prostate. And you'd also check the rest of him, of course, while you're there. But I would augment that with a blood test and urinalysis. And that just gives me a picture of, like, what's going on with his physiology, what's going on with his physical body. And if I ruled out any issues from that kind of investigation, the next step, if you wanted to go down that path, would be an ultrasound of his bladder and urinary tract. But if you didn't, you could probably conclude that if all of those tests came back as, you know, all okay, that it is a behavioural issue. And then, okay, the next question is, well, how do you train him out of that? And I'd be asking him, is he on a lead when he goes walking? It sounds like you guys are on acreage, or he's on a lead. Okay.
yeah, beachside sort of area, but he goes up walking through the bush with my husband.
Oh, I see, yeah. Well, if he's on a lead, I'd be encouraging him, if he's treat response, if he's got a treat drive, I'd be encouraging him to walk off with the lead. So you sort of call him to come, and then you'd have to pull him just initially to get him to realise, okay, I've got a lead, a treat out in front of you here. And then the moment he relinquishes, you know, urination and moves off from that position, he gets a treat. And so you might be able to develop a training method where you say, come on, or a command that he very quickly responds to, and he stops urinating and just walks off and continues to walk.
Thanks for calling in, Lois, on that one. You're listening to Dr. Sam Jones. Lynn has rung in with a question for him from Harvey Bay. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
I have a cat. He's 19, and all of a sudden he's got really bad breath.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think he might have a bad tooth, but I also think he's too old to do anything about it.
Yeah, you bring up raise an important point, Lynn, about concern for older animals and the risk of general anaesthesia. And certainly from talking to clients and the general public about general anaesthesia, I get the impression that most people would feel that there's a significant amount of risk anaesthetising dogs and cats, particularly older ones. So there's a few myths that we need to bust there. First and foremost, the risk to otherwise healthy cats and dogs, so in other words, dogs and cats without any you know, cardiac disease or diabetes or other diseases that we know of, is actually the risk of them having any complication under anaesthetic is actually very, very low. It's something like 0.05% of animals that anaesthetize have some complication. So certainly that might depend a little bit on the standards of care for the veterinary practice that you take your pet to, right? Because some veterinary practices will have very, very high standards of care, advanced monitoring, and the sort of care that you'd see actually if a human went to hospital and was anaesthetised and, you know, they're measuring their all sorts of parameters, ECG and blood pressure, end tidal CO2, oxygenation, saturation, et cetera, et cetera. So that will influence the statistic a little bit. But certainly older animals... age itself is not a disease. Okay, so age itself does not increase the risk of anaesthesia for pets. It's just that the older animals get, the more diseases they typically have. And so, the way I would approach this, Lynn, is to say, well, I would rule out other diseases that's going on in your cat by doing a physical examination and blood test and urinalysis. And once I've done that, then I can be pretty confident that she'll have a relatively safe anaesthetic. And of course, we've got to remember here that if she's got bad breath, you're right, there's a very high chance, unless she's had a dentistry done in the last 12 months, which I suspect is not the case. Would that be fair to say, Lynn?
Yeah, he hasn't, but
he hasn't.
It hasn't stopped him from eating.
No.
He's still eating well.
Yes, okay, and here's the thing. Dental disease in dogs and cats is insidious. Dogs and cats will not show dental pain the way that we might expect them to. If they injure a paw, they'll hold it up off the ground, right? But if they've got dental pain, and I mean even severe dental pain, they will not necessarily drop food, they won't paw at their face, they won't cry, they will just... trot around as they just look normal. And I mean, I can vouch for this because I've seen plenty of dogs and cats come into the consult room, and let's just take a dog, for example, and they'll be trotting around. I think, oh, he's a happy little fellow. And then I examine him and I look in his mouth. I think, gee, he's got pretty severe dental disease. That we do, I make recommendations to the client. I say, listen, I think we need to do dentistry and this is what I can see. And I show them that and we anaesthetize the patient. And once we treat that dental disease, typically, if it's severe enough, the patient would need teeth removed. Once those teeth have been removed and the patient has recovered from that surgical procedure, the clients always come back to me and say, oh, my God, you know, he's a different pet or she's a different dog, different cat. The change is very subtle. It's in their demeanour and it's imperceptible to us because when they're developing the disease and it's getting worse and worse, it's very slow and chronic. So they don't show any signs typically. So I think that is the most likely cause for the bad breath. And then I think, the fact that she's 19, I wouldn't let that stop you from getting into the vet, getting her examined, rule out background diseases, and then I would get her anaesthetised and get that dental disease. Presume, that if she does have dental disease, get it addressed.
Thank you, Lynn. Mary has called in from Gander. Good morning, Mary.
Oh, hi, Sam.
Hi, Mary.
I have a dog whose sister bit her on the ear, and she has like this huge blister.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. How long ago did that happen?
Oh, about 4 days ago.
All righty. And is it what sort of size is it? The size of a 50-cent coin or something like that? Is it? Or?
Oh no, the whole.
Oh, the whole
ear has ballooned up. It's
okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Sounds like she might have what we call an oral hematoma. When we use the word oral, I'm talking about a different spelling of oral. I'm using A-U-R-A-L, oral, meaning the ear, the pinna, actually, the flap of the ear, as opposed to the mouth, right? And we call that a hematoma, which may be related to the bite, certainly. But could potentially also be related to some sort of secondary effect from the bite. You know, let's say she was uncomfortable and rubbing the ear or shaking her head or something like that. That kind of blunt trauma to the ear flap can cause blood vessels to rupture, and then the blood kind of pools underneath the skin. You see it a lot in wrestlers and rugby players, you know. And then what can happen is the blood will eventually sort of dissipate and be reabsorbed, and you can end up with fibrosis of the ear. So if you ever look at those wrestlers' ears, you'll see the cauliflower ear and that sort of thing. So what she will need is to be assessed first and foremost to confirm that, you know, she's got what I'm thinking she's got. And then back in the day, we used to treat all of these patients surgically, actually. We used to make an incision, you know, we'd anaesthetise them and then make an incision down the length of the ear flap, the pinna of the ear, it's called, and release the blood. And then we'd actually put what they call mattress sutures through all the way through the ear flap to the other side in order to keep the two kind of sides of the ear together and prevent it from ballooning out again. But these days we treat it medically, and we get pretty good success with treating with steroid anti-inflammatories. So anyway, I would get her to the vet and get her assessed, and then that's probably what they'll do. They might try and drain it first by putting a needle in it, get some of that blood out, and they might just have a look at that sample underneath the microscope, make sure there's no infection there.
Thank you for calling in, Mary. You've been listening to Dr. Sam Jones. Any final word you'd like to leave us with on this topic?
Well, nothing on this topic particularly, but Ashwin, I did want to just make a mention that if anybody out there is interested in watching general anaesthesia live, you know, demonstration, we're actually having an open day on the 28th of October at my local vet in Capalabar. And so it's from 9 till 2, and we're going to do two live demonstrations of general anaesthesia. These are a couple of pets. They actually own, well, one of them's my pet, Digby. He's due for dentistry, and the other one is owned by Dr. Rachel. And so they're due for to have their teeth done. We thought, wow, what a great opportunity to show people, you know, what we do behind the scenes at a busy, you know, veterinary practice. So there'll be all sorts of great things for the kids out there, little, you know, animal farm and face painting and stuff like that. So come along.
Dr. Sam Jones, thank you for that. Unveiling the veterinary clinic for you there. So.